is now established. Well, I can't tell the difference between 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock listening, which I had written down 2 o'clock listening. So for me to start talking about the timing of the coming of the Messiah is that.
So basically, you're early.
That is amazing. So that's about as ridiculous a prospect as one could imagine. So I really deeply apologize. But you can see that I didn't have time to forge anything. So if anybody wants to look at what I wrote in my calendar, it says 2 p.m., you at least know that my incompetence is responsible for this and not my disdain for the audience. Okay. So, how do we know when the Messiah will come? There's a famous curse in the Gemara that says that the answer to that question should be, we shouldn't, or at least we shouldn't try to find out. People who calculate the end should, the nice translation is, blasted be they who try to calculate the end. Fastidious people might want to say, people who try to calculate the end should drop dead. However, not only did Jews try to do this for perfectly understandable psychological reasons, the Gemara itself contains several messianic calculations, some of which appear on the same page as the curse. So there was apparently some disagreement about this. And sometimes that kind of curse can be generated by the existence of disagreement. Let me just say that the Ramban in Sefer HaGula provides explanations for why it's okay to calculate despite this curse. He says some obvious things. He says one thing that's, if I'm interpreting him correctly, not obvious and extraordinarily clever. The obvious assertion, which was made by many others, is that the curse only applies at a certain point in history, but as you get closer to the end, it becomes permissible. The curse only applies to people who say their calculations with certainty, but it doesn't apply to people who make it clear that they're uncertain, and therefore the rabbi's concern, which is explicit in that Gemara, namely that if the time passes, people will lose their faith, will not be operative if the person who provided the calculation made it clear that these are, in the Ramban's words, divrei shema ve'efshar. Now, the other thing he says, which is, if I understand it correctly, really very interesting, he turns the rabbinic curse on its head. Almost argues that for the very reasons that the rabbis issued the curse, it is now a mitzvah to calculate. He doesn't use the word mitzvah. How could that be? Well, I just mentioned to you that the reason the rabbis give for the curse is that people will try to figure out, I'm sorry, that people will rely on this calculation, and if it doesn't come true, they will lose their faith in the Messiah altogether. Well, the Ramban says, that's all well and good, as long as there are no calculations already on the table. But there are. And so, he is writing in the 1260s, in Sefer HaGeula, where he makes this argument. We think we know, that there were calculations for 1290 that were fairly widespread. And so the Ramban says the following. I'm elaborating, and I keep saying, assuming I understand it correctly, it's a line, basically, which is somewhat cryptic. Let's say I don't provide my calculation. I believe that the Messianic date is 1403, not 1290 in the Christian calendar. I keep quiet because of the rabbinic curse. The year 1290 comes, and it passes without the coming of the Messiah. And people will lose faith, exactly what the rabbis are worried about. But if I provide a later date, which I believe to be the correct interpretation of Daniel. It's not that I'll concoct something. I provide a later date. And 1290 passes, and the Messiah doesn't come. Instead of losing faith, people will say, well, maybe the Ramban was right. So that silence, failure to calculate, would result in precisely the untoward consequence that Chazal were concerned about when they said you shouldn't calculate. That's what I mean by turning the matter on its head. I wish I could take questions and comments, just that I have to apologize again. Because I came so late, I'm afraid I have to just try to cover roughly what I wanted to cover. I would love to have discussion, and if you want to, after 2 o'clock, that will be fine, in whatever location. In the time of Chazal, how would you go about answering this question? When will the Messiah come? So you would say, well, Chazal had the Bible to work with. And the Rambam says famously that Chachomim did not have a Kabbalah b'inyonim ele, ela lefi hechrei ha'psukim. They worked with their understanding of biblical verses. So, and he's talking not just about dates, but about the whole messianic scenario. You try to find out when the end of days will come through looking at biblical verses. The trouble is that there aren't any, at least not straightforwardly. We'll get to Daniel later, not too much later. But there aren't any biblical verses, setting aside Daniel, and I think even including Daniel. What's your option? Well, what I think that Chazal did, and in some respects I think it's a certainty that that's what they did, is that they looked at the past and saw certain past events as types, as foreshadowings of future events. And so we have the following calculations in Chazal. Number one, a statement that I won't discuss here at all beyond saying what it is, but which had an enormously important afterlife. The world will last for 6,000 years, 2,000 Torah, 2,000 Tohu, 2,000 Torah, 2,000 the days of the Messiah. But because of our many sins, some of those last 2,000 years have already passed. Alpaim Torah, Alpaim Yimot HaMashiach, Uv'avonotenu Sherabu, Yatzu Mehem, Masha Yatzu. This is probably a typology, as it were, based on the 6 days of creation representing 6,000 years for the world. Avraham's arrival on the scene around 2,000 years after the creation. Not exactly, but close enough. But then we have some more precise dates. After all, this one says the year 4,000 is the beginning of kind of a potential Yimot HaMashiach, but it doesn't say that it has to happen then. On the contrary, it says that it's been delayed. We have a date of the Messiah coming, or something that is pretty clearly the beginning of the Messianic process, 400 years after the destruction of the Second Temple. And that is a clearly typological date based on the duration of Shibud Mitzrayim, according to Brit Bein HaBetarim. So that the exile now will last exactly as long as a kind of exile lasted the first time around. I think that is crystal clear. Chazal, however, also give another date, which is interesting and challenging, 4231 La'Yitzira. Now, given the date that Chazal used for Churban Bayis Sheni, which we will come to again, which was the equivalent of 68 CE, not the 70 CE that we use. And there are various reasons for that which we can't discuss now. By this calculation, 4228 Layetzira was exactly 400 years after the destruction, not 4231. So there are an extra 3 years here to deal with. And here, there have been various explanations as to how to deal with it. None of them, in my opinion, at all satisfying. Except by coincidence, I think that the one that I suggested was more satisfying. I sort of surveyed the various explanations. It looked to me like mine was more attractive than the others. So let's look at the passage in Daniel. You have Daniel 12 in front of you?
Yes.
Good. Okay. So let's take a look at the relevant passage at the very end. Okay, if those of you who don't have it, I will.
See if there are more in here.
Okay.
Lots more.
Oh, great. Very good. Okay. Thank you. I'm still going to use this Tuan Tanakh because it's a kaptora on something. Some of my students have heard me tell this story. There are some additional ones here. Many years ago, when I was teaching a course in Yeshiva College at the very beginning of my academic career, I had to read a verse in the New Testament. And the only New Testament that I had in those days was something from an old King James Bible that my father had given me. So I brought it in. It was falling apart. And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was then still teaching a shiur in Yeshiva and also an English class. This is a very long time ago. One of the students said, as could only happen in Yeshiva, I took out this falling apart King James Bible, right, for me to read something from the New Testament. One of the students said, his New Testament looks like Rav Aaron's Rambam. So I finally told this to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein about 30 years later at a good dinner. He enjoyed it. But at least I have a falling apart Tanakh. I don't want to stop using it. In any event, if you look at the very end, the next to the last verse, whatever that means, something bad. 1290 days will presumably pass. And then it says, 1290 days and 1335 days. Now, the plain pshat of this, and there's a midrash that really makes it clear that Chazal understood it also that way, at least some of them, and there's no indication that any of them understood it differently, is this will come as a shock perhaps to people who have gotten used to another reading. But I think that Chazal understood the word days here to mean days. And not years. Days means days. Now, if that's true, and it's not exactly a stunning assertion to make, then it means that during the Messianic process, there will be a period of about 3.5 years that will pass until the process reaches its culmination. I mean, that's really the pshat, the plain pshat of these verses. And that means that, I think, that the date 4231, which is 403 years after the destruction of the Second Temple, means that there will be a period of 400 years of exile that is equivalent to the original 400 years of exile. And then the additional 3 years of the messianic process asserted in this passage in Daniel. So that in terms of the fundamental calculation, or in this case, typology, 400 from the Churban and the year 4231 are the same. I mean, they're both operating with the typology of the 400 years of Shibud Mitzrayim according to Brit Bein HaBetarim. But the second one factors in the additional 3-year period that Daniel points to. This, by the way, also explains why in Chazal, I think, that also explains why in Chazal you never have, never is not right, there's one place where you do, but generally you don't have an allusion to the book of Daniel in trying to figure out when the Messianic age will come, because by this reading, Daniel doesn't provide such information. There's no date in Daniel as to when the Messianic process will begin. There is another date in Chazal about 85 Jubilees, where I have a really far-out speculation. I'm much, much less convinced of that, and I don't want to take the time to deal with it, but I will only say that 85 Jubilees for the duration of the world also ends up in pretty much this period of around 400 years after the destruction of the Second Temple. Once we move to the Middle Ages, or if you wish, the period of the Rishonim, a variety of other strategies becomes possible. First of all, Daniel can be mobilized, but I'll get to that in a moment. By the way, I just want to say something that's kind of obvious, but I'll say it anyway. Aside from the fact that interpreting days as days doesn't require much explanation, interpreting days as years in the time of Chazal would have delayed the redemption unduly, because any plausible starting point for that number couldn't come before Churban Bayis Rishon. And if you add 1,335 years beyond the destruction of the First Temple, you would end up with a date very much in the future, in the time of Chazal. And there's no reason to take the word Yamim as years if what you get out of it is a redemption that will be depressingly late, at least as a guaranteed date. I should make clear, by the way, what everybody essentially knows, and that is that Jewish eschatology or Jewish messianic calculation operated with the assumption that that there is a final end, but that an earlier redemption is possible through tshuva and so on. So it's not an end after which nothing else, before which there could be no redemption. It's an end after which the redemption will not be delayed. And as many of you certainly know, Chazal attached this to the verse in Yeshayahu, Ani Hashem Be'itah Achishena, which ends a Haftorah, so it's a reasonably familiar verse anyway. I will hasten it in its time. And Chazal saw Be'itah and Achishena as a kind of oxymoron almost, and said, Zachu Achishena, Lo Zachu Be'itah. In this context, I like to tell a story of the time that there was a lecturer who was getting a new chair at Columbia, who was also remained in Israel half a year. And he was going to speak, and it was Dan Miron, this is not Lashon Hara exactly, that somebody gave a long speech and a long lecture. And Dan Miron's inaugural lecture for his chair at Columbia began around 8:30 p.m., and he said he was going to discuss four themes in Agno. At about 10 to 10, he said what was evident if you had been paying attention, and that is that he had only discussed three, and it was already an hour and 20 minutes. So he asked Yosef Yerushalmi, who was chairing the session, how much time do we have? And Yerushalmi, who is nobody's fool, said we have to vacate the room at 10 o'clock. So that gave him 10 more minutes, and he had spent an hour and 20 minutes on three themes, so one would have hoped that he would say, okay, I'll stop here. And instead he said, well, I'll do the best I can in 10 minutes. So I was sitting next to Professor Lawrence Schiffman, who would clearly know the reference, and I just wrote him a note that said, Lo Zachu Be'ita. But in any case, the dates that we're talking about are dates beyond which the redemption would not be delayed, not a date that the redemption cannot precede. By the Middle Ages, we have calculations based on astrology. We have calculations based on what one could call the typology of history, that is, Somebody, at least according to Gerson Cohen's book on Abraham Ibn Daud, Sefer HaKabbalah, this is a book that points to a messianic redemption based on earlier patterns of history. 500 years passed between important event A and important event B. Another 500 years passed till the next crucial event in Jewish history. And he uses rabbinic dates having to do with redaction of the Mishnah and stuff and things like that. And if you look at it, it looks like the next 500-year period was going to end in 1189. So there may be, and probably is, the use of historical typology as a way of predicting the end. There are historical events, so that the Tatar conquests that come around the time leading up to the year 5000 Layetzira, which is 1240 CE, is a period in which there is some messianic excitement. It's possible that the Crusades created at least some messianic calculation, although that's less clear. There are even references here and there to prophets. There was a Ezra Hanavi, he's called, among Ashkenazic Jews, who had some sort of vision. In any case, there are ways to try to figure these things out, but you can see from everything I've said that they are not exactly decisive. Gerson Cohen wrote a famous article arguing that it was Sfardi rationalism that produced a greater degree of Sfardi messianic calculation, because they had a god who would behave predictably and in a way that is accessible to human reason. But then there is Daniel. By the Middle Ages, the temptation of understanding Daniel's days as years increased. Because now you could start at a reasonable terminus and come to a redemption that is going to arrive soon. A number of very important Rishonim took this path to the point where the word Yamim in chapter 12 of Daniel came to be understood by Jews almost universally as years, even though there is no concrete evidence for that. It was also useful in debating with Christians who, for whom it was desirable that this these events culminate in the past. But even though it doesn't really work out in a Christian chronology, they have to engage in all kinds of forced interpretations to get it to really work. But it was still useful. And from that perspective, too, Jews were not anxious to say that days here means days. In any event, here are some examples of how the greatest of medieval Jews, Saadia, the Ramban, and Abarbanel, used the passage in Daniel that is sitting in front of you to figure out when the redemption would come. Let me first point you to an earlier verse in chapter 12 of Daniel, where we find the expression Moed Moadim Vachetzi, verse 7. Vayishava b'chei ha'olam ki lemoed moadim vachetzi uchechalot napeitz yad am kodesh, whatever that means, tichlena kol eile. So you have here a phrase Moed Moadim Vachetzi. There is a phrase in Daniel 7, Idan Idanin Uflag Idan, the same thing in Aramaic. Time, times, and half a time. Which Jewish calculators felt that they needed to coordinate with their understandings of the 1290, or more prominently the 1335 years as they understood it, in verse 11. Here we see examples of ingenuity of the sort that is worthy of the great figures whom I named. For Saadia, Moadim times refers to two separate consecutive times. The duration, if you look at the periods of Jewish history before Daniel, Daniel is presumably living during the Babylonian exile. So you ask, what were the periods of Jewish history before his time? And the answer is If you begin from the Exodus as a terminus to start counting, the first period is the 480 years that the book of Kings tells us elapsed from, nodding from when? From Yetzias Mitzrayim until the building of Bayit Rishon. 480 years, it says. Chazal's date for the duration of Bayit Rishon, which is the next period, is 410. 420 was the duration for Bayit Sheni. 410 was the duration for Bayit Rishon. Those are the Moadim. Now, half of that, Vachetzi, is 445. So if you add the 890 and the 445, right, the 890 is 410 plus 480, and then half of that number, 890, you get 1335, exactly the number of years mentioned a few verses later. So they are coordinated perfectly. Now keep in mind that this interpretation understands the word limo'ed. The word mo'ed in limo'ed doesn't count in the calculation. It's mo'adim v'chetzi. So what does limo'ed mean? It's like limo'ed chodesh aviv. It's an introductory word. It means when the period of mo'adim v'chetzi will pass. Okay, so it's 1335. Then you just have to figure out what the starting point is. And for Sa'adia, the starting point is sometime during the Babylonian exile, which leads to a redemption, probably, although it's not an absolute certainty, somewhere in the 960s. Since he died in 942, that means it's a redemption that could have come during his lifetime. A certain courage involved in providing such a date. Let me just say that for Sa'adia, the 1290, remember, we haven't accounted for that, is simply, it's a date that starts a little later, but culminates in the same year. He said it's much like the Brit Bein HaBetarim's number of 400 for Shibud Mitzrayim, even though, of course, it's more than Shibud Mitzrayim proper, according to the rabbi, and 430, which is an alternative number. And it was the accepted Jewish view that 430 simply started this with a slightly different, slightly earlier terminus, but they culminate in the same year. So he understood the 1290 and the 1335 as starting at a different point but ending at the same point in the 960s. Now we come to the Ramban. The Ramban, of course, lives after the 960s. And what he does is produce an explanation that is so straightforward, so attractive in its simplicity, that it attracted very many Jews during the more than a century between the time he provided it and the time of the date that he predicted. And some people, without all the calculations of the Ramban, came to this independently too, because it's so straightforward. 1335 years to be counted from the destruction of the Second Temple. It says here that something bad will happen, right? After which you wait that number of years. The Ramban said you'll wait 1290 years for the arrival of Mashiach ben Yosef, and 1335 years for the arrival of Mashiach ben David. That accounts for the two numbers. There's a 45-year period between the two messiahs, the first one who was killed in battle, and the final one. What the Ramban does with Moed Moadim Vachetzi, which has to be coordinated with this number, right? That's a real test of ingenuity, even though the first explanation, the first part of what the Ramban says, is very straightforward. And what he says is that the Moed refers to the initial period of Jewish suffering, which is the 400 years of Shibud Mitzrayim plus the 40 years of wandering in the desert. So that the Mo'ed is 440. If you multiply that by 3.5, this time the first Mo'ed counts. Mo'ed, 1, Mo'adim, 2, that's 3.5. You multiply 440 by 3.5, you get 1540. Where does that come from? Well, according to very plausible calculations based on rabbinic chronology. Rome came to power 1,540 years before 1403 CE. So it means that the final period of Shibud, to the final kingdom, is Moed Moadim Vachetzi, which means 1,540 years. And that comes out exactly when the 1,335 years culminates. So the two numbers again mesh perfectly. And finally we come to Abarbanel. 1403 passed. Abarbanel, as you all know, lived at the time of the expulsion from Spain in 1492. He was not really willing to reassess the Ramban's basic understanding if he could avoid it, because it was really so straightforward. You still want to count from Churban Bayis Sheni. So what did he do? He did something that at first glance will seem almost childishly mechanical at first. He adds the gematria of the word Yamim. You have to wait for Yamim 1290 and Yamim 1335. You add the gematria of Yamim, which is 100, and the 1290 becomes 1390, and the 1335 becomes 1435. So you would think that you have 1503 as the final redemption, which you do according to Abarbanel, but the 1290 is not 45 years earlier, it's about 48 years earlier, because he considers plausibly, I don't have time to look at this, that the number 1290 begins from the cessation of sacrifice in the Second Temple, which was about 3.5 years before its destruction. So you get a date for the first stage of the redemption, which comes 1,290 years after that beginning, of around 1453 on the Christian calendar. Now, and 1503 for the final one. So this sounds like a, you know, a mechanical, I use a strong word, childishly mechanical kind of trick. Except that you have to remind yourself that he's writing in the 1490s, and he's saying that something critical happened in the messianic process in 1453. For that, you really have to have courage, or maybe be foolhardy, unless something really happened in 1453. So what happened in 1453? No, that's too early for Ferdinand and Isabella. Something monumental in the history of the world happened in 1453, something that shook Western Europe to its core. The fall of Constantinople, the conquest of the Roman Empire by Muslims, or to put it differently, the fall of the fourth empire of the Book of Daniel, which Jews understood to be Edom, or Rome. The Roman Empire fell 1390 years after the plausible terminus in Daniel. Now, where do you get 1390 when it's really 1290. The answer is, you add the gematria of Yamim. So that there was evidence that you should add the gematria of Yamim. There was powerful evidence. And so Abarbanel was able to delay the redemption to a few years after he was writing, but it's still only a few years. He's writing in the 1490s, in the late 1490s. And he's looking toward a redemption in 1503. Now, when that year passed, it no longer became possible to reasonably argue that the so-called years in Daniel begin with the destruction of the Second Temple. And so you had to look for another terminus. And with this calculation, I will end. I'll add a few sentences afterwards. This is, to my mind, one of the most stunning messianic calculation in Jewish history because of everything that it combines. I mentioned to you earlier that there is a chazal that says that the world will endure 6,000 years, 2,000 tohu, 2,000 torah, 2,000 yemot HaMashiach, but because of our sins, some of those years have passed. Now, that appears to mean, certainly one meaning is, that the Messiah's first year of possible arrival, of potential arrival, is the first year of the last 2,000 year period. In other words, 4,001 on the Jewish calendar. Before that, you can't expect the Messiah to have come. Now, if somebody tells you to wait 1,335 years for the coming of the Messiah, when do you start to wait? You start to wait when waiting makes sense. You don't start to wait for a guest 2 hours before the guest says that he or she will come. You start waiting at the time when the guest is expected to come. And so, the date of Daniel comes out, what year on the Jewish calendar? 5,335, right? You start with the first year of that period is the year 4001. That's when the Messiah will come. That's 1575 on the Christian calendar. Okay, I mean, I wouldn't say this is the most stunning calculation on the basis of this. What it is, it has the virtue of the Ramban's calculation in that it really is straightforward. It's not kvetchy. It's straightforward. Now, in mid-16th century Italy, some Jews noticed something remarkable. I'll just say, by the way, that some people connected this with the verse Ad Ki Yavo Shiloh, and they said that Shiloh is 335, and you know, you add the 5,000. The trouble is, Shiloh is written with a yud. You have to say, well, it doesn't matter. Gematria with a yud, it doesn't matter, is not all that attractive. But in any event, the original argument is very, very straightforward. And then this is what some Italian Jews noticed in the middle of the 16th century. And this, you know, just blew me away when I first read it. I didn't discover this. I mean, David Tamar, an Israeli scholar, is the one who wrote an article pointing this out. Take a look again at the last two verses of Daniel that are in front of you. Ashrei ha-mechakev yagi eliyamim 1335 ve'ata lech la-keitz v'tanuach v'ta'amod de-goralcha le-keitz ha-yamin. This is where the number 1335 appears. So let me ask you to take a guess as to the gematria of these two verses in their entirety without any finagling whatsoever. You add all the letters in those two verses, and what do you get? 5,335. Now you tell me that that is not not mind-boggling. And so, you have here an enterprise in which was a profoundly seductive enterprise, whatever the rabbinic curse may have been, to try to find out when the exile of the Jewish people will end. Now, after this period, I think it's fair to say that Daniel receded in Jewish messianic consciousness as a way of figuring out the time of the end. And I would say, rightly so, since according to the Pshat, 1335 days probably means days. It's not that Jews made a decision, declared that Yamim there means days, but the old approaches really seem to peter out. Now, I have to say that it's not clear how much calculations ever drove messianic movements or messianic candidates. Calculations are not prominent in Sabbateanism, which comes after 1575, although they are not absent. They are almost entirely absent in religious Zionism, and they are almost entirely absent in Chabad messianism. Calculations don't drive these developments. People now sometimes talk about the year 6000 as the absolute end because of that Chazal that I mentioned to you. But I have to say that it makes me very nervous when I hear people talking about the certainty of redemption by the year 6000. The Rambam said that Chazal don't have a tradition about these matters, and we should believe in the coming of the Messiah, but wait. A friend of mine told me about a classmate of his in Chaim Berlin High School who said that if he were alive in the year 6000 and the Mashiach wouldn't come, he would throw his tefillin on the floor and step on them. This is not the sort of thing that Jews ought to discuss with certainty. And we find such assertions, you know, it's now sort of safe to talk about the year 6000. There's such an article that I once found on an OU website. This is not a good idea. What is a good idea is to believe in the coming of the Messiah and to wait. And I again apologize for my lateness.